I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. This hour, yesterday's resignation of National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. This came after the Washington Post reported that the Justice Department warned the White House last month that Flynn had so mischaracterized his communication with the Russian ambassador concerning sanctions that he might be vulnerable to blackmail by Russia. It also came after Flynn's misleading statements to Vice President Pence, who didn't find out about the sanctions discussion until Friday after reading the Washington Post. And then last night, the New York Times broke a major story. Trump aides had contact with Russian intelligence, phone records, and intercepted calls show that members of Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign and other Trump associates had repeated contacts with senior Russian intelligence officials in the year before the election. This according to four current and former American officials. At a brief news conference today with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, President Trump took two questions from conservative news outlets and wasn't asked about the contacts with Russian intelligence. He was asked about Mike Flynn and said that, "I think he's been treated very, very unfairly by the media, as I call it, the fake media in many cases. I think it's really a sad thing that he was treated so badly," and calls him a wonderful man. To talk about these stories, and they're happening so rapidly, it's hard to keep up with everything. We have two guests with us, and we start with Philip Rucker, national political correspondent at the Washington Post. He is one of the lead reporters who chronicled the 2016 presidential race, previously served as White House correspondent and congressional correspondent, and traveled the country covering Mitt Romney's 2012 campaign. He joined the Post in 2005. And Philip, we thank you very much for being with us. Hello.
Hi, it's good to be with you. Yeah. And just one addition to what you just said is I'm now back covering the White House.
So oh,
I'm,
you
I'm
are?
The White House Bureau Chief now. Yes.
Oh, you are? You're a pretty busy guy these days, aren't you?
There's a lot to keep up with.
Yeah. You know, it's been said, and I'm wondering if you want to claim credit for this, that perhaps we wouldn't have seen the resignation of Michael Flynn if it hadn't been for the Washington Post.
I think that's right. You know, I was actually the reporter who reached out to Pence's staff last week as we were preparing that first story to give them a heads up and just let them know that we would be mentioning him in the story and give them a chance to weigh in. And apparently it wasn't until they actually, you know, Vice President Pence read the story that he actually realized that he had been lied to by Michael Flynn.
And yet, Flynn's lies had been known to the Trump White House for a long time. How long had they known?
They had known for several weeks. I believe it was January 26th when Sally Yates, who at the time was the acting attorney general, had a discussion with the White House counsel, Don McGahn, and told him that they were aware of Flynn's conversation with the Russian ambassador and that they had discussed the issue of sanctions, which contradicted what the vice president and other senior administration officials had said on television. And, you know, she wanted to alert the White House to that. And McGahn immediately spoke with the president about it. And Reince Priebus and Steve Bannon, I believe, were also a part of that conversation. But they did not include Vice President Pence in those talks. And Pence did not find out, of course, until February 9th when the Washington Post story was published.
Mm-hmm. So Pence is really out of the loop in all of this, it would appear.
It certainly seems that way. He was out of the loop on this issue in particular, and it's hard to overstate how angry he was with Michael Flynn for having been misled. Pence is the one who went out on the Sunday morning talk shows and defended Flynn, said that he never had a discussion of Russian sanctions, which of course is simply not true. So it damaged, or seemed to damage, threatened to damage the vice president's credibility. But I think the TikTok, the timeline that we've since learned, really seems to signal that Pence is not in the loop on everything. We know that the vice president spends a lot of time on Capitol Hill talking with senators and Congress members and trying to build relationships between both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, but in terms of being in the inner circle on some of these national security matters, he seems to be more removed.
Mm-hmm. The president, perhaps you were there at the very brief news conference today, and he seemed to be taking questions not from the mainstream press, but from very conservative outlets. He wasn't asked about this major story about Trump's aides having contact with Russian intelligence, which you've been writing about, and the New York Times had a major story on last night. He was asked about Flynn and said, I think he's been treated very, very unfairly by the media, as I call it, the fake media. I think it's a really sad thing that he was treated so badly. Well, he must have been fired by Mr. Trump. And don't you think that eventually the president is going to have to speak to these stories that are very serious?
Yeah, a couple things on that. First of all, it's really astounding and I think shameful that in these several days now where Trump has had press conferences, none of the reporters that he's called on has asked him directly to address these Russia questions and the questions of what he knew and when, and really get into the details of this situation, which, you know, we're all waiting for answers. I think the American people want to hear answers. And unfortunately, the president has been calling on friendly reporters from conservative outlets who have avoided asking the toughest questions of him. Now, you mentioned the timeline of the reasoning for Flynn's departure. And I can tell you what I know, which is that on Monday night, shortly after Flynn's resignation became news, I spoke to a senior White House official who told me that Trump did not ask Flynn to resign, did not fire him. But in fact, it was Flynn who came to the president and said he would be resigning on his own volition, that the president's instincts were to continue with Flynn in the job for at least a few more days to see whether he might survive the controversy. Now, fast forward to the next day on Tuesday, Sean Spicer, the press secretary, said at the podium during his press briefing a different version of events, which is that the president ordered the firing of Michael Flynn, that he had lost trust in Flynn and wanted him fired and executed, or to execute the firing, rather. Then today, Wednesday, Trump is at the press conference with Prime Minister Netanyahu, and President Trump certainly didn't indicate that he fired Flynn. He actually praised Flynn and talked about what a wonderful man he is and portrayed him as a victim of sabotage by the media. So there are different stories we're hearing from the White House, and I think we really need to try to get the clear answer.
Yeah. What do you think? And I'm wondering, I guess that there are there's audio of this. He had a lot of conversations with the Russian ambassador. I think won 5 calls in one day. Would it be unusual? Could this guy just be acting rogue and call the Russian ambassador and talk about sanctions on his own? Or does that seem rather strange that it must have been ordered by somebody, get a hold of the Russian ambassador and let's talk about the sanctions. Maybe we'll lift them, you know, as a result of your helping us in the campaign.
Yeah, that's a great question. And unfortunately, we don't know enough information to be able to answer it. For example, we don't know whether the conversation was mostly about sanctions or whether that conversation was about a whole bunch of other things. And maybe they exchanged sort of one sentence about sanctions. We just don't know. We don't know whether Michael Flynn discussed sanctions with the approval of President Trump or not. We also don't know whether after the conversation ended, Michael Flynn briefed his boss, then the president-elect, and told him what he had discussed with the Russian ambassador. These are all questions we want answers to, and hopefully at some point in the near term here, the president will take some questions on it, or his staff will be a little bit more forthcoming.
Or there will be more investigations. Do you think those will happen?
I think they're almost certain to happen, although that's going to take some time. So we do know that that the FBI is investigating the matter in addition to other ties between Trump campaign officials last year and Russia. We also know that members of Congress and in the Senate are calling for their own independent investigation of the Russia ties and in particular of the Flynn situation, but that has not been sort of formalized yet. So we don't know what form that will take, whether that will be a special committee or part of an existing Senate or House committee, and you know what the timeline for that investigation could be. But I expect that these probes will continue probably for several months, and unfortunately for the president, continue to be a distraction at the beginning of his presidency.
Yes, I'm sure it will be. So all of this news that came yesterday, that these intercepted calls, phone records showing that, and we don't know who these people are, although CNN has said that they do have names. They're just trying to get confirmation of those people. So maybe we'll hear that sometime today. Members of Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign had repeated contact with senior Russian intelligence officials. Trump was briefed on this at that dossier, big dossier meeting that took place before the election. So was President Obama, to the point where the Obama administration didn't want to give much information to Flynn because they were worried about him and about his possible connections here. It raises a couple questions. Why wasn't a lot of more of this information forthcoming if these investigations were going on now, I guess, primarily by the FBI? Why are we just hearing about all of this now?
Again, a great question. I don't know the answer to it, but certainly I think a lot of people would like to hear from Comey, the director of the FBI, mm-hmm. why he thought it was necessary to go public during the campaign with their investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails and yet say nothing to the public, disclose nothing about an investigation into Trump and his associates and their connections with Russia. Clearly, this is angering the Democrats, as you can imagine, and there's a feeling that this may have been rigged.
Mm-hmm. There have been reports, and you would know better than anybody, that this White House appears to be in disarray, that there are positions that are not filled, that people are saying contradictory things. Press Secretary is saying one thing. Kellyanne Conway is saying something completely different a few hours later. Do you have a sense of an administration in disarray?
I do. And here's what the problem is. First of all, the outside world, the senators, the ambassadors, the world leaders, they don't have a clear sense of who is in charge at the White House. Reince Priebus is the chief of staff. He runs the process. He is ostensibly in charge. But, he's had a rough go at it. Steve Bannon, the chief strategist, has a lot of influence. Now, sources inside the White House tell me that Priebus and Bannon get along very well now, but there are other figures as well who have a lot of power and control. Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, is a senior advisor. Kellyanne Conway, we all know her from television, Trump's campaign manager. She is now counselor to the president and has the president's ear. And then there are other figures that kind of float in and out of the Oval Office offering advice, and what it leaves is the impression of disorder, of sort of competing influences, and this is an administration that in these first 4 weeks has kind of been careening from crisis to crisis, even as they get a lot of work done, even as he signs a lot of executive orders, even as he has a lot of these important meetings with business leaders and other stakeholders in the country, there are still crises. There's the immigration ban and the whole process through the courts that has not at all gone smoothly. There are little small flare-ups, and then there's the issue of a national security advisor having to resign after just 24 days.
And we're going to welcome a couple quick phone calls for you. I know you're a busy guy. We'll let you go shortly. Our number is 800-486-8655. And our guest, the first part of the show, is Philip Rucker. He is the White House correspondent for the Washington Post. And here is our first call, Betsy in River Falls. Hi, Betsy.
Hi. Thank you so much for this program. I'm 74 years old, and I've never been so afraid in my entire lifetime about anything. My question is, is there a way that I could find out who the president can fire? Like, could he make the FBI and the CIA and all those people go away and put in people he likes? And God help us if he ever finds out about martial law and shuts down the whole government and puts it in his hand. I would start drinking brandy till I died. I think I would do that. Help.
Philip.
Well, yeah, that's a great question. And first of all, to just speak to the anxiety here, we hear that all over the country, and it's not just from regular people watching the news. Leon Panetta, who was the defense secretary, the CIA director under President Obama, he was President Clinton's chief of staff. He was a congressman. He spent decades in Washington, and he told the New York Times yesterday that he has never been more afraid in his entire life for what is happening in Washington. So there's a lot of concern out there. To answer your question about the firing, the president can fire any of his political appointments. There are about 4,000 of them throughout the government. These are all of the cabinet secretaries, the director of the CIA, the director of national intelligence, those sorts of senior officials. but he's much more constrained in his ability to fire career employees of the government, and a lot of the intelligence agencies are indeed career employees. They're a lot of the people who work on the National Security Council are career employees. And so he's much more limited in his ability to make changes at that level.
The president has talked a lot about leaks, illegal leaks, how upset he is about that. Mm-hmm. Are there a lot of leaks? And if so, why?
Well, you could call them leaks. I happen to think it's really good dogged reporting. But what you're seeing is a lot of stories in The Washington Post, in The New York Times, even in CNN and elsewhere, that reporters are uncovering new information about this president, about the things that he's saying in his phone calls to world leaders, about the connections his aides like Michael Flynn have had with countries like Russia, all sorts of other aspects of this government. And the reason a lot of this is coming out is you have, I think, officials in the government who have some exposure to what's going on and may be alarmed about what they're seeing, and they want to air this publicly. And so reporters, you know, also are working very hard with their sources to try to learn as much as we can about what's going on in the government and bring that to light. That's all we care about, obviously, is the truth and finding out what it is and getting it out there. And that's what we come to work every day trying to do. And fortunately for us, there are sources inside and outside the government who are willing to help us find the truth.
Mm-hmm. Do you know, are you working on this story, Philip? I'm sure somebody at the Post is, and you probably are as well. Do you have any idea who were the members and how many members of the Trump staff were in contact with Russian officials, intelligence officials during the campaign?
I don't know beyond what was reported last night. So, as far as we know, and some of these names have been floating around for some time now, Paul Manafort, who was the chairman of Trump's campaign for a few months last year before being deposed. He's one of the people that is under investigation for this. Others include Carter Page, who's more of an informal policy advisor, Roger Stone, who's been a longtime political advisor to Donald Trump but did not have an official role on the campaign. And then the last would be Michael Flynn, who has been the White House National Security Advisor, but during the campaign traveled a lot with the president and was sort of informally serving as his national security counselor on the campaign. And of course, we remember gave, you know, rip-roaring speeches on the stump and at the Republican National Convention for Trump.
Mm-hmm. Does anybody know, has anybody spoken to the vice president about what his thoughts are concerning the latest developments? He must be pretty darn mad.
Sources that I and my colleagues also talk to say that Pence is quite upset, very, very angry with the situation, but he's not given any public comments yet. He has not sat for an interview or done a news conference or even given a speech in the days since this has become the story. But we can expect to hear a little bit more from him, I think, over the weekend, because he leaves Friday for Europe, where he's going to be attending the Munich Security Conference and a NATO meeting as well, and is expected to give some public remarks. And hopefully, perhaps, an interview as well.
Mm-hmm. And what about the dossier, the former British intelligence agent who gave that dossier, and it was given to, again, both Trump and to Obama? Are we going to have more information about that, or will that just take a whole long time to go through?
I'm not sure. The White House continues to maintain that dossier is, in their words, fake news. So I just don't know, what more we're possibly going to hear about that.
Mm-hmm. Philip, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Philip Rucker, he is the White House correspondent for The Washington Post, one of the lead reporters who chronicled the 2016 presidential race. And we're going to continue this story and welcome more of your phone calls. We'll have a new guest who is the White House reporter at Politico, who was covering politics for The Wall Street Journal in a previous job. Our phone number, what do you make of all this? The sudden news of the resignation of Michael Flynn. We're getting major reporting from The Washington Post, of course, from The New York Times, with their story yesterday that looks at the at least four, maybe more, people who were working on the Trump campaign, aides to Trump, who were in communication with Russian intelligence agents during the campaign. What was that all about? Evidently, there are maybe recordings of all of this. What do you think? Is it just, you know, Hillary Clinton people who, as the president has suggested, were upset with the loss and this should not be investigated? What do you make of the kind of lukewarm reception to investigations by Republicans? Do you think this needs thorough investigation? Are you upset by this story? Are you very upset by the story? Do you not care about the story? We'd love to hear from you. 800-486-8655. And we'll continue with another guest in a moment here on the Ideas Network. Joining us now is Josh Dossey. He is a White House reporter at Politico. Before that, was covering politics for the Wall Street Journal. Josh, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Great. Thanks for having me.
You know, it seems to me as though we're in a situation where this Russian cloud is just going to hang over this administration, that there's going to be solid reporting on this day after day. Plus, we've got all these other situations with immigration and that it's really hard for this administration to move forward on much of anything. They're stymied by it, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing this weekend, President Trump just announced he's having a campaign-style rally in Florida on Saturday. He's also visiting on Friday the Boeing plane in South Carolina that was built, you know, without labor unions and kind of has been a Republican call celeb down in the state. So it seems like he's trying to get out of Washington a little bit and go back to where, you know, he's more popular. Here you have, you know, judges who've shot down his immigration order that caused kind of chaos at the airports and was kind of widely seen as botched and not really thought through by lawyers and experts and State Department officials. You have, you know, the Russian cloud, as you said, you know, accusations that campaign officials had, you know, extensive conversations with Russian intelligence officials. Mind you, there is no proof that they did anything illegal or anything, but that those have emerged, you know, his national security advisor resigning after, you know, not telling the truth to the vice president about discussing Russian sanctions with the ambassador. So you have, you know, lots of different fronts there. And then you have a president who, you know, every day there's seemingly, I don't want to say a scandal, but it seems every night is kind of, you know, really punctuated by a huge story. I mean, it feels like we've been in office for, he's been in office for a year and a half, and it's been, you know, 4 weeks. So anyway, that's kind of where we are.
So what would advance, Josh, the Russian story, particularly the one about aides to Trump during the campaign having contact with Russian officials? Evidently, there must be transcripts of those, audio of those conversations that took place, which the FBI must have. Will there be some kind of report? Will it come out in congressional hearings if we have some of those? How will we know exactly what was going on here?
Well, anytime you're discussing things with, you know, Russian intelligence officials, there's a chance that the United States could have a wiretap on those calls. You know, there's a chance that, you know, there's a chance there could be hearings where people are called to testify. There could be transcripts. I mean, it's unclear exactly what we know about the calls, other than there were, you know, sustained communications for, you know, months at a time with the various confidants and allies and advisors of the president. And, you know, then we saw later, you know, the hacking of the DNC emails and the emergence of, you know, some pretty drip for a few months on John Podesta's emails and the Democrats' emails. So, you know, for months, Hillary Clinton's campaign said, you know, everyone needs to pay more attention to these Russian ties. In fact, earlier this morning, I was watching some of their old campaign videos urging people, you know, to pay attention to this. And it kind of got drowned out in a way until after the election when, you know, in the past 3 or 4 months, it seems like it's been in the news every week. But I think the core question here is essentially, you know, what were the conversations? And was there any quid pro quo? Was there any promise of doing something once they got in office? Was the campaign doing anything to help them obtain emails? Was there a discussion on how to disseminate the documents? So basically, was there any direct, you know, link between the interference in an American election and, you know, the spying on the political process and the campaign? And I mean, if so, that's a pretty damning allegation that could have, you know, widespread ramifications, to say the least.
Yeah. Well, in some of this, the president has just said so many unusual things about Vladimir Putin, who he evidently greatly admires. He's also, let's listen to, this goes back to July of 2016. He's in Florida on the campaign trail, inviting Russia to hack Hillary Clinton's emails. Here's Donald Trump.
What do I have to get involved with Putin for? I have nothing to do with Putin. I've never spoken to him. I don't know anything about him other than he will respect me. He doesn't respect our president. And if it is Russia, which is probably not, nobody knows who it is, but if it is Russia, it's really bad for a different reason, because it shows how little respect they have for our country when they would hack into a major party and get everything. But it would be interesting to see. I will tell you this. Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
That was a pretty unusual statement, wasn't it?
Sure. And it kind of contradicts the first thing he said, where he said, I don't think it's Russia. And then later he says, Russia, you know, if you're listening. One of the biggest quandaries for a lot of for Republican senators and his GOP allies is this kind of, you know, bizarre relationship with Vladimir Putin. You know, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, you know, the traditional Republican orthodox, even Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, have been, you know, far more of a hard line on Putin, who've criticized him for his record on human rights, you know, for killing dissidents, for, you know, the way he's run his country, for his invasion of other countries, you know, for kind of a strongman tactics that, you know, have kind of dominated his time as president. And you've had President Trump, who has seemed to, you know, cast kind of a blind eye to some of those accusations, who has had kind words for President Putin, and, you know, he said that he wants to have a warmer relationship. And it's kind of been puzzling to everyone with all of these different allegations behind the scenes. Again, there's no proof on that anything untoward has happened yet, but with all of these different allegations and all the smoke, you know, you couple that with a president who takes a far different approach to Russia than the rest of his party, and, you know, lots of people kind of have raised eyebrows. You know, what's this about? Why is he so much more accommodating to Vladimir Putin than others in the party? And
it gets
more interesting by the day.
It sure does. Do you sense, and Sherry on Facebook, we have tons of calls coming in, we'll get to them momentarily. Sherry on Facebook writes, is it too soon to whisper impeachment? And I've heard some people, you know, who are pretty politically astute, say they really see a beginning of a Watergate-like thing happening. Is that going too far, Josh?
Well, I think we're a little too early for that. I do think in the spring we'll probably see Democrats you know, bring impeachment votes on the floor, mainly as political symbolism with this president. So I don't think we're at that point yet where we're going to have any sort of impeachment proceedings. And additionally, you know, for all of the kerfuffles and controversies and investigations into, you know, ethics violations and not handling national security secrets maybe well and communications with Russia, there has been no fire yet. It's been all smoke. I mean, smoke emanating from all sorts of places, but I don't think anyone's been able to put two and two together and actually, you know, make a damning case for an impeachment proceeding. So I don't think we're at that point yet. I do think the kind of rat-a-tat pace of revelations over the past month have, you know, really upended Washington. I mean, you saw today on the front page of the New York Times, there was an active general in charge of you know, the Joint Command Center is saying that this, you know, the country has had unbelievable turmoil, and he's hoping people to get it together. You have all these foreign officials who say, you know, we don't know what's going on. We don't know who to listen to. We don't know, you know, what is actually shaping American policy now. So I think it's too, you can't rule anything out, because the past month has been a total, you know, change in decades and decades of foreign policy and American politics.
Let's go to calls. Kurt in Elkhorn. Hi.
How you doing?
All right, Kurt.
You know, I'm wondering, you know, I hear all this stuff. You're saying all these things about all these people coming in and out of the White House and all these things going on. You know, it is a new presidency. I mean, how does all of this compare to, say, the first, you know, 4 or 5 weeks of Obama or Bush? Or, I mean, doesn't every president go through this? And is the stuff with Trump being being, you know, over exaggerated. You know, is this really, you know, because the Democrats have certainly been, you know, I've never seen an ad where people are talking about, oh, my husband voted for Trump and I voted for Clinton and, you know, the House is divided. And I mean, I've never seen ads like this after an election.
Well, I think that what's concerning here is this Russian involvement, at least for the moment. And I don't recall a situation like this in my pretty long life looking at various administrations having this kind of potential very large scandal hitting a White House so early in an administration. Do you?
Well, I think it's a little interesting is that, you know, a national security advisor has resigned in the first, you know, 3 weeks. You have all of these allegations, you know, several investigations already begun in Congress in the first month. And you have, you know, lots of questions at the agency level across the government of, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of empty desks. You know, they're not appointing people to these cabinet positions. They're not appointing people to, you know, sub-cabinet positions to be deputy agencies to kind of run the government. I mean, there's certainly a sense from our reporting and from what others are reporting, too, that, you know, they've had a particularly tough learning curve here and have been, you know, have been a number of embarrassing revelations, 1, 2, 3, that have not been like other presidents. I mean, to be fair, I think President Obama and his team certainly had a learning curve. I mean, if you go back and read, there were, you know, challenges for them in the first month or two, but I think they played more by the typical protocol of Washington. They, you know, went through the State Department channels. They talked to the lawyers. They talked to the experts. They were cautious. And, you know, one of the reasons that I think President Trump's tens of millions of voters liked him was that he was such a bull in a china shop. But when you have, you know, a bull in a china shop coming into the White House with no government experience, and you have him, he surrounded himself by a number of other people who also don't have any government experience, and they just start, you know, acting without going through the processes and just doing things on their own kind of rogue ways. You know, I definitely think you're right that the results have been different than any other president. And, you know, if you like the president, there are probably parts of that you really like. But there also have been some pretty concerning parts for, you know, long-time government observers, civil servants, you know, folks who really care about kind of a, you know, day-to-day success of the government.
Yeah. Well, plus you've had not only Flynn, but you've also had two other people very close to Donald Trump involved with the campaign and being a security advisor who've had to leave because of their Russian connections. You've got Flynn, who's got, you know, in addition to his dealing with the Russian ambassador, sitting at the table next to Putin and getting paid for a speech and, you know, saying lock her up when it came to Hillary Clinton, kind of a strange guy. Plus, you've got business dealings that the Trump family has had, huge dealings. I mean, Russian investment, his son has said, have been at the core of a lot of their business expansion. So it's really all over the place. It's not just Michael Flynn.
Right. You have folks at, you know, his different aides and advisors. You have his people outside the government, Roger Stone and, you know, these other advisors who are accused of his Russian contact. You have, you know, his family business that's in the middle of these lawsuits. I mean, you had a president 3 days before he took office pay out $25 million in a settlement over, you know, his university. I mean, it's the kind of controversy here. And again, I want to be careful and not, you know, cast too many aspersions because a lot of it is still to be seen what's really happening out there. But the controversy here is drinking from a fire hose some days. It's, you know, it seems like everyone's touched by it. Everyone is, you know, affected by it, and there's questions being raised about almost every aspect of his government. I mean, you haven't seen that many questions yet about Reince Priebus, his chief of staff, but, you know, you've seen lots of questions about Steve Bannon and his influence in the White House. You've seen questions about Jared Kushner's business deals and what he was doing during the transition while also, you know, affecting the government. You've seen questions about Ivanka Trump and her business line after the president, you know, got on Twitter and blasted Nordstrom, and, you know, Kellyanne Conway went on television and said, you know, to buy Nordstrom products, which the Office of Government Ethics says was a clear violation. You've seen questions about Kellyanne Conway and her TV appearances and, you know, some of the puzzling, I will just say the word nonsensical statements she's made. So basically everyone in his orbit, you've seen some sort of swirl of controversy in the first 4 weeks, and that's not, normal. That's just not normal.
Right. Yeah. Kurt, thanks for the call. Mary in Pewaukee. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, a lot of this is not normal. Yeah, I think we're going to have a horrible 4 years, but I'm pretty sure impeachment is pending soon. If you and your guest, Kathleen, are familiar with Robert Reich, he seems to have a handle on things that are going on right now, and I think people that are kind of in the know, and hopefully he is, and that he is right on in what he's saying. But he is pointing towards tyranny, and I'd like to ask the guest what the guest feels if we do go into tyranny, and what are the ways that we can prevent this from happening. If you look up tyranny and then you compare what Donald Trump has done, and I can list the seven if you have time, there are seven different points.
Yeah, we don't have time for that, but we'll look it up.
Okay.
But yeah, and thanks, Mary, for the call. Robert Reich has been a guest of ours many times, former labor secretary who's been very outspoken in his criticism of this administration.
Right. I think most striking parts of his presidency has been kind of the polarizing spheres that Donald Trump has created. I mean, you have tens of millions of his supporters who, as he joked, and I think it was a joke, said I could shoot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue and they would support me, you know, regardless. And then you have, you know, large population, you know, his approval rating is lower than any other of his predecessors in the past few decades, like Mary, who are saying, you know, holy crap, I mean, this guy's president, and, you know, we think he is totally unqualified, totally unprepared, you know, has started all sorts of tiffs with previous friends and has caused concerns among foes and, you know, really doesn't have a handle on this. And I don't know that I would get into tyranny 4 weeks into the administration, but I do think some of his actions, some of his comments have, you know, sparked really, like, extreme worries among people who don't like him. And, one of the more interesting parts of this to me is that his allies, his aides, you know, kind of use that reaction, I think, to their benefit sometimes. You know, as Steve Bannon said in that famous New York Times interview, the media is the opposition party. You know, I think these protests, you know, they've come out, and I don't think there's any truth to this, which is shocking, I know, but, you know, it's paid protesters.
Right.
I mean, they've been really, okay with the polarization. So it's been fascinating.
Our number is 800-486-8655. Angela in Manitowoc. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to say that I think that we all need to be very careful when we are looking at these issues, that we're not continuing along the same path as we were prior to his election. At this point, he is our president. But we do have a civic duty and responsibility as a, you know, the public in a democratic republic to look into these issues. I mean, if there is smoke, there's some type of spark or fire. As part of the system of checks and balances, we need to make sure that that fire does not get out of control. So I think everybody needs to kind of try their very hardest to be adult about this and stop using parties and, you know, polarizing issues as ways to inflame the situation and really look at this and see how is this going to cause effect on us as a nation.
Right. Well, we need to find out what the truth is, don't we? And it really points to how important a press is in this country, Josh. Never been more important, really.
Right. And I think you have an administration that openly has tried to, you know, take away the legitimacy of the press,
right.
You know, question particular outlets and really go after folks who are pursuing truth against them. And, you know, the president has repeatedly called outlets like BuzzFeed and CNN and the New York Times failing. But if you look at the financials and the metrics, you know, newspapers and websites who cover the president have never been doing better. You have, you know, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post have all, you know, reported a big uptick in subscriptions.
Yes.
I mean, I've seen our page views here, you know, they've skyrocketed on tough Trump stories and stories kind of hold government to account. So I think among, you know, the vast majority of the public, they're really searching for answers. You know, they don't necessarily trust everything the administration says. I mean, to be completely frank, they don't trust everything the media says.
No, they don't.
But, you know, when you have some of his supporters who don't trust the media at all, and some of the, you know, readers of the New York Times and the Washington Post that don't trust him at all. And I think there's probably, as you said, never been a more, never been more of an appetite for, you know, robust and fair and unbiased news coverage.
More phone calls in a moment. Josh Dossie is our guest. He's a White House reporter at Politico. We're talking about Michael Flynn's resignation, and we're also talking about the huge story that was front page news in the New York Times, but it was broken last night. It was front page story today. Trump aides had contact with Russian intelligence. That story is only going to be flushed out in the days ahead. Our number, thanks, Angela, for your call, 800-486-8655. Our lines have been busy. You can always leave your messages on Facebook, which we like to read after the show and sometimes on the show. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network. Another thing that we've been talking about is messaging that's not really consistent among people in the administration. We were talking the first part of the hour about how Vice President Pence must be pretty upset right now that he was not told the truth about whether or not sanctions were discussed during Flynn's conversation with the Russian ambassador. We had the president today talking about how wonderful Mike Flynn is and that this is really created this whole thing by the fake news. And we have, you know, people expressing support for Flynn shortly before his resignation. So it's all over the place. Here's what Kellyanne Conway had to say just a few hours before Flynn's resignation.
Yes, General Flynn does enjoy the full confidence of the president, and this is a big week for General Flynn. He's the point of contact for many of these foreign visits. If you look at the official schedule, today we had the Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, here, obviously, for bilateral meetings. On Wednesday, we're welcoming Benjamin Netanyahu here to the White House. And behind the scenes, they're doing a number of different meetings where they're talking about trade, they're talking about terrorism, security, the fact that Canada and the U.S. are very important neighbors to each other and will continue to be. And obviously the National Security Advisor is a very important point person in those discussions. General Flynn has said he can't recall and that he had about 30 phone calls with leaders at the time, and since then 70, I'm told, with different leaders. And I'll just leave his comments at that.
Josh Dossie is our guest. Josh, when you want information from the White House, do you have sources that are very reliable who you know are telling you the truth?
that's funny that you should ask. I think about that a lot. The short answer is not exactly. I mean, one of the things in this White House is a perfect example in the Flynn situation. You had Kellyanne Conway on Monday afternoon saying he enjoyed the full confidence. You had an hour later Sean Spicer, the press secretary, saying, you know, the president was evaluating the situation. Later that night, you've had senior administration officials telling me and other reporters that General Flynn had offered to resign. The next day, you had the press secretary, Sean Spicer, saying the president forced his resignation. Today, you had the president saying that Flynn was a wonderful man and had been picked on by the fake media, and that's why he resigned. So in the course of, you know, 36, 48 hours,
right,
you had five vastly different stories,
mm-hmm,
or at least varying stories. So no, you don't. I mean, you have to understand it's two things. A, you know, a lot of the aides and the advisors to the president are not going to tell you the whole truth. They don't tell each other the whole truth. And then you have a pretty mercurial president who, you know, I've talked to people before, two different people who had talked to him in the same day and had heard totally different things. So if you talk to one advisor and that person says, you know, I think the president is saying this or is going to do this, you know, you can call someone else 45 minutes later or 2 hours later And they'll say, oh, well, I talked to the president earlier, and he said the exact opposite. He's kind of a guy who governs by gut and tends to rely on the last person he talked to. So it's kind of a it's a difficult proposition. One of my colleagues jokingly refers to it kind of as a snow globe because, you know, the snow never really stops moving, and you have to figure out it every second where things are. And, you know, there's been several occasions in the past few months where you've been writing a story, and in the time it takes to write the story, the entire story changes.
Oh, my gosh.
You can finish it. So it's quite a fun time.
Yeah, it makes your job hard. Gary in Merrill is our next caller. Hi, Gary.
Yes, hello. I like Donald Trump more and more every day. I wish him the best against all of the odds against him, even his own party, even the trash of McCain, all the bad things he says. Turkey had to break with us and side with Russia for all the crimes we were committing in the Middle East. And I think Trump is going to come in, and as he gets better and better at his job, he's going to let the American people just how much terrible things the both parties have been doing to us. I think that's what's going to happen. And I hope that when his lovely wife, when she goes to Armenia, I hope they don't just follow her relentlessly and try to destroy her trip. But
all right. Thanks very much, Gary, for your call. Let's go to Cassandra in La Crosse. Hi, Cassandra.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call. So I have a couple, things that I wanted to say. First off, you know, President Trump doesn't want anybody looking into all this stuff that he's doing, like with Russia and other things. And personally, for me, all that shows me is that he's obviously doing something wrong that he doesn't want us to find out about. Like his whole... Everything about him is like he's shrouded in secrecy, and I am fearful.
All right. Thanks, Cassandra, for your call. Bob in Kewaunee. Hi.
Good afternoon. Well, this kind of goes to the last caller. Wouldn't it go a long way to actually know where his money is? Why can't Congress get the courage to pass a law that says he's the president of the United States? We have a right to know where his money is and who he's beholden to.
Yeah, would you like to see that? Do you think you ever will, Josh?
I don't think we will ever see it voluntarily. I mean, you saw the New York Times last year, had a story based on one tax form that was leaked to them. You have, you know, some idea of a picture based on various, you know, records filed in different states and different countries on his business holdings. But yeah, I can't imagine a Republican held Congress demanding that from the president of their own party who says he doesn't want to give it to them. And B, you know, I can't imagine him voluntarily providing it. I mean, he has previously said in the campaign that he would provide his tax returns after an audit was completed. But I don't think any of us are holding our breath because it might be a dangerous proposition.
A lot of people are pretty worried here. Let's read a couple of Facebook comments. Megan in Wapaka writes, I cannot understand the cowardice and hypocrisy of leaders like Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell, who truly will not admit that this emperor has no clothes. Our democracy is at stake, and they need to step up and appoint a special prosecutor to investigate the Russian connection. We are in for rough times, and our security is very vulnerable. What do you make of what Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell have said here? Do you think they'll be forced, as this story keeps progressing, to have widespread and thorough investigations? And would you agree that we are in for some rocky times as a democracy?
Yeah, I took to one of Paul Ryan's aides earlier to me who said, you know, all the members see all these different things in the news and feel really jittery. They feel like it's difficult to get their, you know, agenda passed. And he used some pretty choice words to describe, the organization of the White House. And then that said, you know, Paul Ryan will go on TV tonight or tomorrow and will say largely positive things about the president. For them, it's kind of a delicate political balance.
Right.
You know, they want lower taxes on corporations. They want to repeal Obamacare. They want, you know, to reduce regulations of various agencies like the EPA and HUD and different places. I mean, they really want this kind of Republican vision of government that they, you know, have not been able to have for, you know, 8-10 years. And, you know, they have a majority in the Senate. They have a majority in the House. They have a Republican in the White House. And, you know, for the past month or so, there's been kind of a constant swirl of allegations, and we've had to respond to his tweets and some of his more, you know, off-the-cuff, not well-thought-out comments. And, you know, they really would prefer, you know, the president, to, for lack of a better word, to just, you know, shut up so they could focus on the policy agenda. But as one of Paul Ryan's aides told me earlier today, we don't think he'll be quiet anytime soon.
No, so. Thank you, Josh. Josh, thanks so much for being with us. Carry
thanks
on, sir. Yeah, an easy time to be doing your job. Josh Dossie, White House reporter at Politico. He covered politics before that for the Wall Street Journal. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour and Colleen Duvall for on-air production. If you didn't get on the air, go to our Facebook page and write your comments. We'll read them. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show. News coming up. The high cost of child care, hour two.